powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Tom, Jake, and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacy Ross.
Hour number three of Tom, Jake, and Stacy. We'll be catching up with the professor, John Clayton, here in just a second. By the way, a reminder about Clayton. This comes straight from our 710 ESPN Seattle Twitter account. Okay. All day, every show, Clayton will be on every 710 show this week to discuss the latest from NFL free agency. What do the moves mean for Seattle and their hopes for next season? Find out from the professor himself. Well, to this point, I guess there's always these other moves that affect what the Seahawks are doing. But we really haven't seen anything other than David Moore getting tendered.
No, you've seen stuff that involves current Seahawks. Multiple reports, including from Art Stapleton of USA Today, that the Giants are still heavily pursuing Jadeveon Clowney. There's also a report from Matt Lombardo that the Giants are making a strong push to sign Packers linebacker Blake Martinez, so looking to beef up their own defense there. So stuff involving current Seahawks.
Right, and of course, any move that's made in the NFC is going to affect the Seahawks. So we say hello to DeAndre Hopkins. We say goodbye to DeForest Buckner. Bye-bye, DeForest. And we welcome in John Clayton right now on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. John, what's the, other than the Hopkins thing, or actually, you know what? Let's start there. Can you explain the Hopkins for David Johnson move as far as the Texans are concerned?
Okay, and again, this is the explanation. It doesn't make any sense, but this is the explanation. You know, they were down on draft choices because they had made so many trades last year. They didn't have a first-round pick. They had, seven picks this year and only five picks next year. All right, so in making this deal, they're able to get the second-round pick, which gives them maybe the ability, if they need to trade up into the first round. So they got that second-round pick, and then they get a fourth-round pick next year that gives them six choices in 2021. They have to kind of clear some big salary in the sense that, they got Hopkins and moved him on, and then now have the ability to try to see if they can get Laremy Tunsil, who's going to make over $19 million as a left tackle, and then you've got to figure out something for Deshaun Watson, who could make somewhere in the $35 to $38 to $39 million a year range. All right, so you did that. But here's where the problem is. They pick up David Johnson, a $13 million running back who was a backup, and remember last year they traded a third-round pick to end up getting Duke Johnson. And so that one's kind of confusing because now you've got $10 million tied up on your cap in a running back and and another $5 million or so in Duke Johnson. That's what doesn't make any sense. But not having the draft choices and then figuring that you have a wide receiver draft that you can get things maybe in the draft in the second round, something like that. But to me, it's a bad trade. It's a great trade for Arizona.
Now, this was a free agent that Jake Heaps was very excited about, but tackle Jack Conklin has agreed to a three-year deal with the Browns for $42 million with $30 million fully guaranteed. That tweet is from ESPN's Adam Schefter. What do you make of that deal, and what does it mean for the Seahawks when it comes to the right tackle market?
Well, it doesn't affect them because they weren't going to go to $15 million plus. I mean, that was not going to happen here in Seattle. And so, it still keeps them, in that looking for guys that are going to be 27, 28 years old, maybe 26, in that $7 to $8 million range. So all this does, it just, he's going to go someplace. And so you can see that the Browns have been very aggressive, paying the highest paid tight end in Austin Hooper and now getting Conklin at right tackle. Now, what's going to be interesting, they got Hubbard over there, Christopher Hubbard, who might be let go because, they still need to get a left tackle. They might do that in the draft. But kind of interesting to see the two moves that are made. But I don't think it affects them one way or another because they weren't going to go 15 for Conklin.
John, the deal that was done, this blockbuster deal that was done between the 49ers and the Indianapolis Colts, DeForest Buckner gets moved, and then the Colts extend him on a $21 million per year deal. Does that affect Clowney's deal, and does it make it higher or lower? I think a lot of people are speculating as to the Seahawks now not being able to sign back Clowney because he's going to be looking to top DeForest Buckner's deal.
Yeah, and I don't think he's going to be able to now because you get in. Because again, if the only way he's going to be able to do it is that if he can do it on a 4-3 defense. Because I can't imagine. I mean, he's not Khalil Mack. He's not that MVP type player that can command $22-23 million. I mean, he's a good player that deserves somewhere between $18 and $21 million. That I agree. But he doesn't get the sacks, and sacks get you the big money. You know, DeForest Buckner is dominating as say Fletcher Cox, maybe not as good as Aaron Donald, and you know that move, you know, it takes Indy out of the market because again, now they're a 4-3 defense, and they got him for defensive tackle, and I guess if necessary, he can play defensive end. But no, I think that it may help Seattle in a certain way because now you have one 4-3 team that is now out of the market for a defensive end like Clowney.
Is there a free agent out there that we're not really talking about today that you think could be the Seahawks' first move or one of the early moves in free agency?
Yeah, there may be if they can right tackle. I'm kind of the one I kind of wonder about is, you know, Darrell Williams, who's 27 years old in Carolina, signed a 1-year, $6 million a year deal, but he also gave up 12 sacks last year, so that could be a little bit scary. So I don't know where he would fit into the mix, but I'm sure that they're looking at right tackle and maybe an interior offensive lineman in if necessary. But I still think that I still get the feeling that maybe they can get something done with Jaron Reed. You know, that defensive tackle market, at least in that $10-11 million range, hasn't started to heat up yet.
Man, if that were the one big move they made, I mean, it's fine if that's what they think is right for the team, but that would fall so flat on this fan base here to assign a guy that you already had that's coming off a bad year in a suspension.
Well, I mean, what do you expect? I mean, this is not going to be a big free agent team and never really has been a big free agent team.
But they have so I understand that, and that's fine, but they have so many needs. I thought maybe like one key guy somewhere. Like Jake really wanted Conklin, and I hear what you're saying. That's an expensive price, but you know, that type of player would have really gone a long way here.
John, what speaking on that, is there a type of player on the defensive end market that you think would, you know, draw some of that attention? Is there the possibility? So let's say Clowney, you know, his stock rises mm-hmm. and he's out of question. Do you think Robert Quinn, Dante Fowler Jr., do you think those guys are within range, or do you think they're too expensive as well for what the Seahawks are going to be wanting?
No, I think that they're within range. I mean, Fowler's younger, although he's, 28? So, and he's probably going to get $15 million or so. I don't know if he can get to $17 million. You know, Eric Armstead, you saw, got to $17 with his deal. The same thing as Dee Ford. Quinn's going to probably be, you know, I don't know if he can get as much as Jason Pierre-Paul because JPP was able to get $13.5 million. So maybe in that $11 to $13 million range is where Quinn's going to come in. You know, down lower is going to be Vic Beasley and some of the guys like that. But, you know, that's the thing. It's like you want to move as quickly as you can. And the perfect fit, I still think, with Unique and Dockwe. But the problem is now with the Calais Campbell trade, with him being traded to Baltimore, that would, if they would trade in Dockwe, which they still might because of the cap, you know, they're going to be so thin for pass rushers.
You know, Mike Reese, who covers the Patriots, he's covered them forever. He's an excellent reporter. And I was just reading through his Twitter feed, and he said something along the lines of, you know, he's got a feeling that based on the aggressive offer that Tampa Bay has made to Tom Brady and the potential, whatever issue is going on with the Patriots may drive him out of there. What do you think, if there is an issue between Brady and the Patriots that is going to keep him from going back there, what is it?
Well, the issue is basically what Bill Belichick wants to pay Tom Brady. And the growing thought is he would almost want him to take a pay cut from the 1-year, $23 million deal that he had signed last year that gave him the ability to get into free agency. And if that's going to be the case, whatever Tampa is going to offer is going to totally top anything that the Patriots would do. And so I think that's what the underlying feeling is that because now, again, they couldn't do any kind of real offer until yesterday because they didn't know what the cap is going to be. And so the cap ended up being a little bit narrower or lower than they thought at 198.2. And then they come back and then they franchise Joe Thuney, the guard, who is going to be the best, highest paid guard on the market. So they may be in a position right now where, I mean, Tom Brady is there for Tampa, and maybe you can say that the Chargers are in the mix or whatever. But I think right now things are leaning toward Brady going to Tampa.
That's interesting, John. I wonder with Kirk Cousins and all the deals that the Vikings have been making, how much cap space have they been able to save, or are they still in serious cap trouble? Because they've been making a lot of moves, you know, Kirk Cousins extension, you know, cutting a few players. I mean, where are they currently at?
They're not in good shape. I mean, despite with all those moves, I haven't got the Cousins deal yet. So I think they saved $10 million on that deal. But I have them at 3.957. So they're just barely over the cap, or under the cap at 3.9 million. So they still have more moves to make. Like, for example, wouldn't be surprised if they cut the left tackle, Riley Reiff. You know, they'll probably maybe cut another offensive lineman. And they've already let three guys go who are former Pro Bowlers on the defense. So they're churning things up. And of course, what hit them a little bit, where they did clear out enough room that they can keep Anthony Harris, who is considered to be one of the top two safeties on the market. And so they kept him at 11 plus million bucks. But no, they still got some issues.
John, you're a busy man this week. Thanks for coming on all of our shows so often. We appreciate it.
Okay, thanks.
John Clayton on the Zeke's Pizza Hotline. Let's go through some of these NFL headlines.
Wow, Jake, that was really deep.
Jake, you heard.
Tried to bring a little bass there.
As low as I can make my voice.
That's disturbing. What's the most concerning thing here today for the Seahawks based on what we've seen so far?
Well,
Buckner, maybe?
Nah.
You don't think so? Buckner setting the market at $21 million going to Indy?
When you're talking about in terms of Clowney, yeah, I think that that is definitely disturbing for them. Seeing DeAndre Hopkins come into the NFC West is not fun, but hey, you always got to compete. I mean, you're not afraid of a challenge. But yeah, I mean, in terms of re-signing your own guys, yeah, Stacey, I think you're probably right. Is DeForest Buckner leaving and getting a $21 million year per deal, I think that that is a huge deal for Clowney, because that sets kind of the floor of where Clowney wants to be, and he wants to get more money than that. And I don't think the Seahawks are in a position to where they're going to be willing to spend that type of money. So where does that put you? How do they solve that? And I think that that's hard to see a player like Jack Conklin, for example. Everybody was projecting him as like a $16.5 million type of player. He signed for $14 million. I mean, that's a guy that I know the priority is defensive line, and that's where you need to be spending your money. But, man, that would have been an awesome frontline player that you could have had at a cheaper price than what you were anticipating. So I just think that they're, for the Seahawks, obviously they have a style and approach to how they go about their business. I'm just hoping that players like Dante Fowler Jr., Robert Quinn, aren't taken off the board by the time the Seahawks really get diving into it and start making their moves, because they have to legitimize their defensive line and get some significant pass rushers. If they only sign, let's say that scenario that Clayton spelled out for us, that they only sign Jaron Reed and he's the headliner in this draft or in this free agency market, I think they seriously missed the boat on this.
Now, Adam Schefter, adding some additional details to that Jack Conklin deal, says he earns $20 million in the first year. So it could have been a cap space issue that Jack Conklin wanted to get more guaranteed money, get a lot of that money earlier, and then hit the market at a younger age, around 28, as opposed to signing on to a longer-term deal. So it could have been messing with the way Seattle likes to structure their cap space as well.
As the reason why he didn't come
in. Yeah, I mean, that could have been, it could have been either they got outpriced, it could be maybe they have more interest than fans think in re-signing Jermaine Ifedi.
How is it that the Browns got all this cap space?
Because they're bad. Bad teams usually have a lot of cap space because you don't have a lot of stars.
But they do have a lot of stars.
They do. They got a lot of stars.
They have like more stars per capita than most teams.
Just bad coaching.
Bad whatever it is up there.
It's going to be, they've got zero excuses. The Cleveland Browns have zero excuses. So you had a year like for, gosh, I forget his name already, the head coach that was there.
Freddie Kitchens,
yeah. I mean, for Freddie Kitchens, he had no excuses not to win. I mean, that place was an absolute zoo. He lost the locker room in a hurry. I think Stefanski has got more of his stuff together, but there's not a whole lot of wiggle room for Stefanski not to have success there. I mean, anybody taking over that situation, you got a pretty good deal going on in terms of all the talent around you. It's just a matter of, can you keep Baker Mayfield and his head on straight?
He will have succeeded where many, many, many others have not.
Yeah,
before him.
That's true.
Regardless of talent.
I don't know of how much talent has been there quite like this.
Hey, by the way, somebody who we called out big time last week has gone out and done the right thing.
Who's that?
Saints owner Gail Benson has donated $1 million to a coronavirus fund.
The coronavirus fund.
Now, last week, Zion Williamson took $100,000 of his own money and donated it to, I believe, the arena employees where the Pelicans play. Now, Gail Benson owns that team as well.
Yes.
And we were all saying, well, you know what? If Zion Williamson's doing it, why isn't the owner doing it? Well, now she is. The question is $1 million enough? Should she be donating like $30 million?
Well, I don't know about 30. I saw a report that one of the owners is, you know, taking care of, you know, all of his workers.
Arthur Blank is doing it. There's a lot of owners.
And it was somewhere around like $3.3 million to really effectively take care of everybody the way that they would normally pay everyone. So I wonder if that is truly going to cover the costs, or if she's throwing that out there as, I've gotten a lot of crap for not doing this early on, and now I've got to do something. So I wonder, I hope that that's something that actually, you know, takes care of the issue, and hopefully it did.
I think it's certainly good to see more owners, both in the NBA and the NFL. Obviously, the NBA is more impacted, but just from around the league, kind of find ways to help the community in any way they can. So whether it's by assisting, a stadium nearby, or whether it's their own team. I just think that it's something that I was disheartened to see not as much of last week. Because again, like, it's easy for people to say, well, it's not their job, and that's a lot of money to give away. But at the same time, we're in a pretty unprecedented crisis, and I think now's the time for charity, and now's the time for helping out. And it seemed upsetting to see a 19-year-old take action before the owner.
But he's just taking the lead. I mean, in thinking about it, this is easy for me to say now, but sometimes you just got to give people time.
But would
she have done it had he not done it?
Right.
I don't know. But you know what? I'm not handing out report cards to people yet.
I think, yes. I think it's hard now to be too critical when she has done it and when people are doing it. And you're right. It's not the time for me to, like, get on some podium and be like, well, you didn't do it soon enough.
But, right. Let's all get through this, and then we'll look back and see.
But I would encourage people to keep doing it.
Sure. I mean, Kevin Love, I believe, was the first guy who did this. I think he started it when he donated $100,000. Sometimes you just need a leader out there for everybody else to follow. And hopefully we'll see a lot more of it. Can you explain, by the way, the difference between the transition tag and the franchise tag? Because the Cardinals using the transition tag on Kenyon Drake, I think, is one of the reasons why they were able to part ways with David Johnson.
The franchise tag, I'll start with franchise tag, and then Jake can do transition tag.
Do you know what it is, Jake, or no?
Not off the top of my head.
He's pulling it up. So franchise tag is you get one that you can use per year. It's essentially a one-year contract that is the average of the top five salaries at that position, or 120% of the previous year's salary for that player, whichever is greater. So it's often an average of like the top five salaries, especially if it's a guy coming off a rookie deal, because he's not going to have one of the highest paid ones. So not surprisingly, the top franchise tags are for quarterbacks. Defensive ends, though, are the second highest franchise tag, and it's a one-year deal, so it's not something that you can stick to. And obviously, if you choose to franchise tag that player again the next year, it goes even higher, and you can only do it, I believe, three times.
Okay, so the franchise tag, the salary there is an average of the top five, you said?
Yes.
Top five at that position.
Top five at that position. And just because a team does it doesn't mean that it eliminates the ability to get a long-term deal done. You have until July to reach an agreement on a long-term deal.
You do. And for another team to come in and poach that guy away, they'd have to give up.
They would have to trade.
Right.
So when you franchise a player and he signs the tag, it is technically a contract that keeps him on the team.
Can I guess on the transition tag? I think it has to do with the salary that's owed him is like half of what it would be for the franchise tag?
Nope.
No?
No, it's still very expensive. Actually, it possibly even more expensive than the transition tag. Yeah. So with a franchise tag, like Stacey said, you take the top five, you combine them. But with the transition tag, it's basically another way to, as you look at it, it is a tag that, you know, you saw David Moore, they signed him for a seventh round tender. Transition tag is one where they can still, a team can still try and take that player away, but the team has every ability to match that offer. And so I haven't, as looking this up, of course, a lot of these things are difficult to get the exact specs on, but in terms of your transition tag, I think it's actually more expensive to do it this way than it is to do your regular franchise tag. And that's what the Cowboys did with Dak Prescott.
Right.
And it's amazing that they go down that route with Prescott. And it'll be interesting to see if Prescott is frustrated to the point where he just ends up walking away from the Cowboys altogether. Because the way that this contract negotiation has gone between him and the team, I would be very frustrated if I were him.
Let's take a look at what's on tap.
This is What's on Tap with Tom, Jake, and Stacey. So, folks, what's on tap?
I want to read this just from Doug Baldwin real quick.
Okay.
From his Twitter. If you intend on going the safe way, I encourage you to make a donation. 100% of the funds will go to local organizations that'll provide meals to children while schools are closed, help quarantine seniors get access to food, and enroll the recently unemployed in, they're just acronyms, SNAP and WIC. I'm not sure what those stand for. But if you bother to go out to Safeway or really any grocery
awesome.
Store that offers some kind of charity for this whole thing, give something if you can.
Yes.
Give something
definitely.
If you can. Now, as far as what everybody's doing sports-wise, I mean, there's no games, obviously. Something came out last night, though, that would have been really cool for this show. Joe Lunardi, the bracketologist, went through and seeded the whole tournament according to what the most likely way it probably would have been seeded by the tournament. And what might have been in the West region was number six, Jake Heaps' Brigham Young Cougars, against number 11, my Indiana Hoosiers.
Yes.
That is a missed opportunity for trash talk if I've ever seen it.
Oh, it would have been glorious. It would have been so good, Tom, because I would have loved to have seen the Cougars take down the Hoosiers. It would have been great.
Just to see like how I react?
Yeah, yeah. And then I could come
what,
in and gloat. I mean, it would be great.
The Hoosiers are the last team that I have, like, you know, in my pack of teams that I root for, that I really get upset about when they lose.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, so are you watching them and you're getting mad at the TV? Like you're jumping up and screaming? And
you know why?
You're
because
fully
they
invested.
Lose. They lose every game by 5 points. They're in every game. They usually have a lead up until about 3 minutes, and then they just forget how to play.
Yeah. See, it would be really fun for me because I would then have two teams in the tournament. I'd have BYU
Kansas.
And I'd have Kansas. And Kansas being the number one overall seed, I mean, that would have been. That would have been pretty fun.
Well, see, the thing is, you don't have to root as hard for Kansas as you would for Brigham Young because Kansas is a number one seed. Brigham Young's a six.
Yeah, but I'd be rooting very hard for Kansas.
I know.
I'd be rooting harder. I would say that I would be more invested in that BYU-Indiana game just so that I could talk some smack to
embarrass
you.
Embarrass me.
Yeah, of course. You know, and you know, and then I'd move past that, and then I would take over with the Kansas Jayhawks. But that's kind of the nice thing about going to multiple universities. You know, you have diversity. You have options here.
All right, we're going to go over to our sister station next. We're going to grab Aaron Mason of Cairo FM 97.3. We want to keep you guys updated on the nuts and bolts of the coronavirus and what's going on essentially every hour. So we're going to do that next, 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
Now here are your hosts, Tom Wassel, Jake Heaps, and Stacey Rost.
And we bring in Aaron Mason from Cairo FM 97.3. He's the regular host of Cairo Nights, although it sounds like you're a jack of all trades over there right now.
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
It's on.
Act like you've been here before.
Hold on. Not his fault.
Thank you.
It's okay.
Yeah, I'm going to be Dave Ross at 6 in the morning tomorrow.
You don't have the pipes to match Dave Ross. Nobody does.
No, that is true.
Yeah.
It's a bar I don't attempt to hit. I just come in, fill in the blanks, and go about my day.
All right, so we're going to try and extract some information about what's going on out of you. Can you break down the molecular structure of this virus for us?
Thank
Absolutely.
You in advance.
25 minutes and a whiteboard?
Yes.
Yes, then I can do that for you.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's the main thing that we need to take from what Governor Inslee has said? Closing restaurants, bars, etc. Do you think a curfew's coming, or What's your take?
I would be surprised, but I've stopped ruling anything out. I mean, basically what we're doing now is we're looking at other places around the world where this is, where the virus has really taken off, where responses have been both successful and not so successful, and looking at you, Italy. So if you compare the charts, the timelines between us now and Italy back when it started, we were on a pretty dangerous path. We were keeping up with them, and they have thousands and thousands of people dead, not just infected, dead. Mm. And so I think this is a response to go like, hey, guys, we really need to take this seriously if we want to avoid a situation like that, because our healthcare system is not prepared to handle this many sick people at once.
Aaron, what do you think of the trajectory that we are headed on in terms of the precautionary measures that we have taken? It seems to be a step-by-step process.
Yeah.
They have not done it all at once. One, why do you think that that is the case? And two, do you think that we are just continuing to go on step-by-step, getting more and more severe with our precautions that we are taking to curb the virus spreading?
Yeah, absolutely. This is something, I think a lot of it is psychological. I think for the past, especially week and a half, 2 weeks, what you've heard from the government, what you've heard from health officials has been a sort of, we're getting you ready for the idea of quarantine. We're not saying we're going to do it, but we're sort of preparing you psychologically. And so they've been these small incremental steps, because a lot of what they're trying to do is avoid panic. They don't want people to freak out, which, by the way, you should not panic. This is something that you need to take seriously, but there's a difference between taking something seriously and just freaking out over it entirely. And so it's been this move toward these bigger ideas, these sometimes scarier sounds. I mean, shutting down everything, basically, like, that's significant. And that, we haven't lived through this before. I was talking to Ursula Reutin earlier today, and she's like, never in my life have I seen anything like this. And so there's a little bit of stage one, stage two, stage three, you know, and you don't dump the fish in the aquarium. You kind of stick the bag in there, let it acclimate, and then you let it out.
What?
Yeah. Do you know that?
Which aquarium?
You can shock a fish
Tom,
to
that's
death,
why your
Tom.
Fish were always dying, probably.
I did have a fish that died, but it was eaten by another fish.
Well why'd you get so many fish at once?
I don't understand that analogy, but I'm glad to know that we're taking it a little slower here.
Yeah.
So are we still the epicenter in this country right now?
Very much so.
Okay, so we're living in this right now. We have schools closed. For people who have kids, that's probably the most jarring thing.
I would think so.
Parents who probably are used to going to work, having their kids at school, they're now having their kids home, having to figure out
how to schedule their day.
Well, here's the thing. You know, I keep hearing about making sure that kids are learning. How about just making sure that kids are taken care of and fed?
Yeah. Well, there are now there are some districts, there are some places around the area where they are setting up some sort of a meal program. You can go get a bagged lunch and a breakfast for the next day, you know, like a breakfast bar and an orange and a milk or something for the next morning. So there are local districts who are trying to respond to that concern. But we haven't seen a whole lot come from the very top. The federal government and the state government has been, in my opinion, dragging its heels just a little bit. Everybody has sort of passed the buck down the chain to say, well, you guys make the decision for yourself. You guys make the decision for yourself. Maybe that's part of this psychological thing where the government just doesn't want to come in and clamp down everything at once. You kind of get used to it in your own neighborhoods, in your own counties. But we're sort of at that, okay, we need to pull this trigger. We need to do this now.
So sometimes if you stare at Twitter long enough, you see information coming from God knows where.
Yeah.
Yesterday I saw something about the hospitals in this area. Basically any medical facility is just overrun right now.
Yeah.
If there's panic anywhere, that's where it is.
Yes.
Are we going to see the National Guard and the military setting up MASH units soon?
I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, that sounds
way out
there.
Wait, the National Guard?
I heard the National Guard is here. Are they not?
I haven't heard anything about the National Guard.
Okay.
Outside of rumors, right? There's been no real official, like, this is what's going to happen. I know there was that neighborhood, New Rochelle in New York, where they had an incredibly concentrated case. And you know how New Yorkers are. They're not going to listen to nobody.
No.
And so, yeah, they sent in the National Guard to make sure people followed the rules.
Right. Like, if we had a curfew or a a lockdown mandated from the state government, the National Guard and potentially the military would be out there to enforce it.
Yeah, enforcement's going to be difficult. We heard Jay Inslee today. He had a press conference where he canceled a bunch of stuff, right? So now the only things that are basically going to be open are grocery stores, pharmacies, banks, and hardware stores. So we're talking restaurants, bars, coffee shops, food courts, barber shops, hair salons, youth sports, tattoo parlors, gyms, non-tribal casinos, because the tribal lands can make these decisions for themselves. They're not under the purview of the federal government. And, you know, theaters and event spaces and bowling alleys and all that. Trump said, recommended today that you not gather in groups of 10 or more. I heard the CDC this weekend kind of lowered their 250 plus to a 50 plus. So we're really, the hope is that these, what seem like extreme measures, are going to be enough to sort of keep this thing tampered down enough that our healthcare system can deal with it.
What would
you say? Problem
is,
the problem is when too many people disregard these rules and start to get sick, then you've got a healthcare system completely overwhelmed, and that's just bad for everyone.
I was going to say, what do you say to people who are disregarding any of the changes and they say, like, well, I don't really care. I mean, I'm young and I'm not going to get sick,
yeah.
So I don't care.
You got to think about other people here.
You're still a carrier, potentially.
Yeah, yeah, and you can be asymptomatic.
Before anyone texts in,
I'm
practicing self-quarantine.
You still have to go home, Stacey.
I've seen that kind of sentiment before, you know, whether on social media, maybe it's out, you know, I was like walking a friend's dog the other day and like saw plenty of people that were all together. So it's like, well, what do you say to young people who are thinking that?
The quick answer to that is you don't know who you're going to come in contact with. If you're carrying something and you're not aware of it, you could come into contact with someone whose job it is to take care of an elderly parent. And now if your job is to take care of an elderly parent, you don't qualify for coronavirus testing. So you can't even get tested just to be sure unless you're showing symptoms and have had direct contact. So it's just a lot of these question marks, and you have to be overly cautious. That's all.
Aaron Mason of Cairo FM 97.3. You can hear him over there. You want some Clorox wipes?
I'd love some Clorox.
I see you touching the Formica over there. We can wipe that down if you wouldn't mind. All right, we sum it up next. 710 ESPN Seattle.
Time to sum it up with Tom, Jake, and Stacey.
Shot clock turned off.
The final word on everything that matters today in sports. Brought to you by Zone In CBD.
Step back!
This must be a really bad situation for my fellow hypochondriacs out there. Like yesterday, I'm just sitting around. Actually, I was driving and it was super sunny. It was really nice out. And I came home and I had this just throbbing headache. It was awful. And I convinced myself, even though I haven't heard that that's a symptom of coronavirus, I was like, yep, it's coming. I've got it. And I quarantined myself.
I had a little bit of that.
Yeah, I quarantined myself for an hour, took a bunch of Tylenol, and then went back out.
I think that's why it's good to hear Aaron say that, look, for the majority of people, like, you will be fine. And if you get it, it'll just have you won't be facing like life-threatening conditions.
He said there's going to be no vomiting. Like, that's not part of this necessarily.
That was the most exciting news.
To me, it was.
We didn't convey to you guys because we were talking about it during the commercial.
Yeah, I hate throwing up.
It's the worst.
It
there
makes
are
you
so
feel
many
so
other
terrible.
Things. I would rather eat something that's disgusting than throw it up.
And just swallow it? Well, sometimes, well, I guess.
And that's what makes this so hard, though. That's what makes it scary is that you don't have, to me, it would be almost better if that was part of the symptoms, because then you would physically be able to see it, react to it, understand that, hey, this is what's going on to me. Right now, some of the symptoms are just as easy as, you know, you might just feel like you're a little worn down and you feel like you have cold symptoms.
But if that's
you know?
The case, that's, then it's not really that
hard.
Bad.
No, it's not really that bad. But also, when you're talking about the spread,
yeah, true.
This has never been about us. This has never been about us in terms of us individually here in this room or how it affects us or the healthy percentage of the population. This is about the spread and spreading it to those that are susceptible to this. So that's what makes it difficult is, are you a carrier? Are you not? You know, the lack of testing, you know, those types of things, it makes it difficult to really truly understand, you know, do you need to quarantine yourself off or not? And that's the, I guess, scary part about you know, the coronavirus and the potential of it growing and spreading.
I'm just coming here.
You just don't know what it's going to be like in a week or two.
I'm just going back and forth between here and my house and my girlfriend's house. That's essentially it. So
yeah.
Hopefully I won't come in contact with anybody else. Back to the NFL and free agency real quick here. We were talking about Jack Conklin before and how disappointed Jake was that he got, gobbled up by the Browns, right?
Yeah. Yes. They are spending big money. Oh, so while we were talking to Aaron.
Yeah, the Lions.
No.
Oh, go ahead. Say that one, because
then we have news for you.
Okay. The Lions news is bigger.
The Lions agree to terms with offensive tackle.
You got it. Just say the last name.
Halapuliviati Vaitai.
Big V.
On a 5-year, $50 million contract.
He only started one game last year. So if you're looking at George Fant and Jermaine Ifedi, I mean, they've got to be pretty excited about the potential contract that those two could maybe secure.
Was he hurt or did he just start one
game? No, he just started one game. He was like their sixth man in terms of their tackle. Meanwhile, the Browns have agreed to terms with quarterback Case Keenum on a 3-year, $18 million deal.
Heck yeah.
I thought you were going to, when you said Browns have agreed to a deal with quarterback, I thought the next two words out of your mouth were going to be Phillip Rivers.
No.
That would really be interesting. Phillip Rivers with Odell Beckham Jr.
Here's the thing, though. Case Keenum will sit behind Baker Mayfield. Phillip Rivers isn't sitting behind
Baker
Mayfield.
I think it's going to be a more open competition than we're giving it credit for.
I think so, too. I think Stefanski was there with the Vikings when Case Keenum had his best career year. So I think that there's a little bit more to this where, yeah, Case Keenum initially is going to come in and be the backup and all that. But if Baker Mayfield has the same type of year last year, Stefanski is going to pull Baker Mayfield. He's not going to sit there and let that guy act like a knucklehead on and off the field and see a really bad product in terms of turnovers make any moves alongside that. So
if I'm Baker Mayfield, though, sitting there, if I'm looking at my head coach and my new backup quarterback, I'm thinking, this is a new regime that doesn't like me.
Well, or it could be something. I think that a lot of teams have always wanted a good backup quarterback situation. You just so rarely have one. But I think the great case for when that becomes exceptionally useful was the Eagles when they beat the Patriots in Super Bowl 53. And I think people saw that and said, oh, there's actually something to having the best quarterbacks, the best dual kind of backup quarterback situation in the NFL the last thing you want is to put all of this effort and all of this time into getting together the perfect team and to have it just go down the drain because your starter's down. And
yeah, because the Browns think they're Super Bowl contenders.
Well, no, but I think that anytime we see, and I actually think this is going to be a very competitive quarterback room, but I think anytime we see a bigger name sign with a team, unless it's someone like someone signing to back up Russell Wilson, if it's someone, like with the Bears, say that Andy Dalton or Mariota or just someone goes in and signs there with Trubisky, it's going to feel like an open competition. But I think that teams always see the value with that, too. And so sometimes there really are teams that just want a regularly competitive quarterback room.
Yeah, I think in Chicago that sounds to me like it would be Trubisky and whoever, if it were a Keenum-type player, that would be a straight-up competition. Like in Cleveland?
Between Trubisky and
Trubisky Keenum? And whoever. If Keenum went there, in Cleveland right now, the best-case scenario for them is for Baker Mayfield to just play out of his mind.
Yeah.
Yes.
And just be his best. They don't want that to turn into a quarterback competition. If it does, that's a really bad sign from the get-go.
A very, very bad sign. They don't want it to get there, but at least they have a guy in Case Keenum that Stefanski is very familiar with, that he's had success with before in his history as a coach and as a player. So you don't want to go down that road, but this is a good contingency plan on that end. And I think it does send a message to Baker Mayfield that you need to change your approach. You better ship up or shape out. Shape up or ship out.
I love that phrase.
No, it worked the first time. You guys, we're a day closer to free agency.
What do you mean?
Wednesday.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it feels just like it's already happened. I mean, tampering period. That's the funny thing about tampering
period. Best tampering period ever!
Ever! Come on, Seahawks. We need you. Make a move. Not David Moore. More than that.
Nothing's wrong with David.
I want a little more.
Your move, Seahawks. We'll talk to you tomorrow, 710 ESPN Seattle.
Boom, 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 boom.